Joining us on the phone this morning is Sarah Super. She is the founder of an organization called Break the Silence. Sarah, you came to the founding of this organization through a pretty difficult road. Do you want to tell folks a little bit about it?
Yeah, thank you. I started Break the Silence just weeks after I was raped by an ex-boyfriend who I had dated for 7 months. The relationship had never been violent, and it was just a matter of after I ended the relationship that he started stalking me, and that it would culminate in him breaking into my apartment, hiding in a closet, waiting till I arrived home from a trip, and then for several hours waiting in the closet until I went to sleep. He woke me at knife point and raped me and cut me as I could. After an amount of time, I was able to run to escape and screamed in my apartment's common hallway where my neighbors would let me into their apartment and call the police. And since that time, he was arrested that night. He fled the scene. He was arrested, taken into custody, and has actually never left custody. He's part of the 3% of rapists who are ever held accountable for this crime, and he was sentenced to 12 years in prison.
Sarah, how long ago did this happen?
This was in February of 2015.
And the idea behind Break the Silence is to offer sexual assault survivors the opportunity to tell their stories and be supported by other people who have been through the same experience. How is Break the Silence different? There's so much confidentiality, and there is so much silence, and there is so much quiet and privacy around the idea of sexual assault.
Yeah.
Why is your approach is very different? Why is that?
Yeah, it is different. And I guess I would say that on the night that I was raped, I remember being in the hospital room where I was getting the forensic exam, the rape kit completed, and realizing that there was not one person in my life who I could name who had experienced something similar, who I would talk to or want to tell the next day. There was no one who I knew would understand. And that level of the feeling of isolation, of being alone in this excruciating experience, just like compounded the trauma. But it really took me, it was only a matter of hours before I started to tell some trusted family members, some close friends, my supervisors, some colleagues at work. And it was only within like hours or the first few days of the aftermath of my rape that I started to hear people tell me their stories when I told them mine. And I started to recognize that by telling my story, I unconsciously gave others permission to tell theirs. And there was this, there were lots of things that happened because of it. The first thing was that I started to not feel alone in this journey, that I recognized that so many other people were on it. I recognized that the people who I did have close and trusting and loving relationships with, that this was something that, like, the level of silence around this experience of surviving sexual assault was larger than I could have ever possibly have understood. And I also started to recognize that the people in my life who I told who hadn't been sexually assaulted actually started to feel like, actually started to feel connected to the issue of sexual violence, and in a way, I required them to become engaged allies in the work to dismantle rape culture. So seeing the effect that just my story had on people and the people in my life particularly, I recognize that there is great potential, there's great potential for social change if we were to create more platforms and more invitations for survivors to tell their stories if they wanted to, and if not, that would be okay, too, that we'd support survivors either way.
While the Kavanaugh hearings and Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony was engaging us on a national level, Mm-hmm. On a personal level, across social media, everyday people were discovering that everyday people in their lives, everyday yes. friends, coworkers, high school classmates, were coming forward and telling their stories. What did that do in your mind? I think you've touched on what you yeah. think that may have done for those survivors. But what do you think it did to or for the people who had no idea and mm-hmm. suddenly, you know, amidst kitten videos and political rants, there were these very, very honest and truthful and poignant stories?
Yeah, I really think that it helps people recognize that this is a pervasive issue, that sexual violence isn't something that, like, happens in big cities or in fraternities alone, or it's not something that if it's happened to you, you haven't escaped it because of something you did. You escaped it simply by luck. That the amount of people in this country who've been sexually abused as children or sexually assaulted as adults is enormous. And it happens across all social identities. It doesn't matter how much money you have in your wallet or what gender you are, what sexual orientation you are, or what racial or ethnic identity you have, that it doesn't affect all groups the same. As we know, it affects more women than men, or people of color than white people. But we also know that this is something that exists in every community. And I think that seeing people's stories, the people that we know, and seeing their stories show up on our social media accounts is a powerful way that calls us all to be allies. And being an ally is so much more than just not committing this crime, but to actually stand up and courageously take a stand against this form of violence and against the culture that helps this violence be perpetuated.
There have been several eruptions of these kinds of conversations throughout this year where people have felt called by something happening on the national stage to come forward and tell their stories. But there has also been some concern that people who are not ready to tell their stories are feeling pressured and feeling that, you know, they're perhaps made to feel guilty that they should be coming forward and they should be providing kind of the public service to other survivors and to educate the public, and perhaps they're not ready for it. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, my thought is that survivors owe people nothing. They do not owe them their personal suffering and stories in order to help their friends and family change. I do think it's a tactic for social change. I think how we can make it different than saying this is how we're going to change the culture is by offering it as a true choice, where we give people the option of speaking out if they want to, but also supporting them if they don't want to. And how we do this through Break the Silence is always by offering them the option to opt in as well as the option to opt out. So if you'd like, you could, you know, identify yourself as a survivor. You could share any amount of your story, of your suffering, of your healing, if you want to. And if you'd rather not do any of those things, we still support you. There's, you know, so many ways to heal, and definitely no right way to heal. But having this movement create change does not require every person to share their story. And the nature of being assaulted is to be forced to do something against one's will, to do something that doesn't feel right for you. And so we don't want to replicate that same experience through the ask for storytelling or truth-telling. What we want to do is just offer survivors choices in which they could choose to move forward and respect whatever they choose.
Sarah, if people are interested in getting more information about Break the Silence, what's the best place for them to do that?
We have a website, breakthesilence.org, and we're on social media. If you check us out on Facebook, the handle is Break the Silence Day.
All right. Fantastic. Sarah, thank you so very much for sharing the story of your story with us this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah Super, our guest this morning on Northland Morning. She's the founder of the organization Break the Silence.